Avimavai Bhagavato.
Avimavai Bhagavato.
Hariram Savikagato. Hararayaya Charuva. Krishnaya Rukuru Dhava. Tao. Both. Imao. These. Vai. Certainly. Bhagavata. Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare. Of Hari. Angso. Part and parcel expansion. Iha. Here in this universe. Agatau. Has appeared. Paradavyaya. For mitigation of the burden. Cha. And. Bhuvaha. Of the world. Krishna. The two Krishnas. Krishna and Arjuna. Yadu Kuru Udvahau. Who are the best of the Yadu and Kuru dynasties, respectively? Translation, that Narayana Rishi, who is a partial expansion of Krishna, has now appeared in the dynasties of Yadu and Kuru in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna, respectively, in order to mitigate the burden of the world. Please repeat, that Narayana Rishi, who is a partial expansion of Krishna, has now appeared in the dynasties of Yadu and Kuru in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna, respectively, in order to mitigate the burden of the world. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Nara is part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Thus the energy and the energetic together are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maitreya informed Vidura that Nara, the portion of Narayana, had appeared in the family of Kurus, and that Narayana, the plenary expansion of Krishna, had come as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with the purpose of delivering the suffering humanity from the pangs of material burdens. In other words, Narayana Rishi was now present in the world in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna. Read text 58. No purport. Evam sura ganastatta bhagavatam tat adhistuttao labhava lokeya yayato adhito skandaha maranam. Translation, Maitreya said, O Vidura, thus the demigods worship with prayers the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as the sage Narayana. And the Lord glanced upon them with mercy and then departed for the Gandhamadana hill. 59. That Narayana Rishi, who is a partial expansion of Krishna, has now appeared in the dynasties of Yadu and Kuru in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna, respectively, in order to mitigate the burden of the world. This chapter is entitled A Genealogical Table of the Daughters of Manu. Here we're discussing the appearance of Narayana Rishi, who is an expansion of the Supreme Lord, Lord has many different kind of expansions. Can't quote all of their technical names. But I believe this Narayana is a Vaibhav Prakash. Also, they're considered Leela avatars. This Narayana Rishi. So So, the Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the energy and the energetic together are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one cannot separate the energy and the energetic in synthesis. In analysis, you can separate. So like the sun and the sunshine, if you analyze, you can separate those two things. But if you, in the synthesize, they're one, because one is the sunshine is dependent on the sun globe. But without the sunshine, the sun globe cannot be seen by us. And without the sunshine, then the function of the sun will be something else. So you can't really separate the energy and the energetic source. Prabhupada says you never see Krishna alone. He's always with his energies. Krishna also always with his energies, his weapons, his tree, bull, etc. So he's appeared as, Maitreya Rishi is saying that this Narayan Rishi is a partial expansion of Krishna. And now he's expanded again in the form of Krishna and Arjuna. So one person is expanded into two. Inconceivable for us how one person can expand into two. We've heard that yogis can expand into eight forms, but each will be a duplicate of it. They're not completely independent of each other, as far as I understand, in the matter of thinking, feeling, and willing, as far as I understand. But it's not so with the Krishna, because the energies are his energies. They're working under his directions. It's his Shakti. He's Shaktiman. So the energies work exactly according to his will. We try to take the position of God in the material world, but we feel a great lacking, because things don't go how we want them to go all the time, most of the time. We have to make our plans and then so much endeavor to achieve the results that we want, and it's very troublesome to do anything. Just have a meal, it's troublesome. Go to the market, purchase the vegetables, clean them, cut them up, cook them the right way. So much time is spent, and 20 minutes is all gone, eaten. A couple of hours in preparation. Then that's gone. Then there's a little energy which keeps us moving for some time, and again, you need to supply more energy. So life is difficult like that. Troublesome. Everything is troublesome. Because we're born in a troublesome situation, we think troublesome is normal. You can do something else. It's an argument they often. This is Krishna consciousness, or at least this serious spiritual life. You do that when you're old. These pious Hindus say that. When you get old, you can do that. Right now, you're young and you can enjoy it. So that is the illusion of the material world. And we're born in this hard struggle for existence. And because we're born in it, we take it as natural, normal. Called conditioning. When one has jaundice, the sugar candy tastes bitter. It's bitter. But that is a medicine to cure the jaundice. If you keep on sucking that sugar candy, the jaundice will go. It's good for the liver. Sugar candy is cooling. It's not so as harmful as the white refined sugar. And gradually, as the jaundice goes, by taking the sugar candy, it starts to become sweet again. But it never was bitter in the first place. But because of the disease, it tasted bitter. So in the disease condition, this suffering condition is normal. The this endeavor, just great endeavor to exist. It's normal. It's very difficult. But you wouldn't do it if you didn't have to. So the Prabhupada said, if I gave you a pill and you wouldn't die, immediately you would stop work. Immediately you would stop work. Because you're just working to get some money to exist. To get some food, get some shelter, some clothes, etc. And some for your recreation. So if you don't need to eat, if you don't need to, that protection, then you don't need to work so much, hardly at all. So all these, the Lord, whatever kind of avatar the Lord takes, is for this purpose. It's to wake the conditioned souls up to their normal condition of Krishna consciousness. As different from the body. The body is unnecessary. Now it's necessary. If you have one, it's necessary. But it, on the spiritual platform, it's not necessary. Right? When after this body is finished, what will we do? What will be our shelter? So the body is not really not necessary for the spirit soul. It's just a hindrance, just a great weight that we're carrying around. Troublesome. Just making so many demands to maintain this. So this is the artificial situation. Material world is artificial, unwanted, not necessary. So the Lord wants to come and wake us up to this situation and reinstate us in our eternal, natural, spiritual constitution. We'll become free from this material or bodily necessities of life. And then if we're free from these, if we don't have to think about eating, sleeping, mating, defending, then what will we think about? What will you think about if you don't have those things to worry about? What comes next? Just means you don't if you don't have a body, then you don't need those things. Senses need satisfying. Once the hunger and the protection is taken care of, means eating, sleeping and defending, next comes enjoying. Because that's the position of peace. When you're taking care of those problems, when you've got sufficient, when there's no danger, now you can think what to do. Let me enjoy. Mating. Enjoying. So the other things we don't really like those other things. You have to do those. Eating, sleeping, defending, it must be done, you see, to maintain them, but these are demands of the body. The enjoyment is optional. You can endeavor to, of course, enjoyment is coming naturally anyway from your results of your pious activities. But if you want to endeavor to enjoy more, then that is optional. It's not a necessity. But eating you can't avoid, sleeping you can't avoid, and defending you can't avoid. You've got to do those things. So what do you do when those the three are absent? There's no pressure now. The material nature is not pressuring you to eat, sleep, or defend. Some relief. This has taken us happiness. This has taken us peace. But what do you get? Peace is not enough. No anxiety is not enough. So this is an indication that the soul is actually by nature ananda. And active. So therefore we seek some activity for pleasure. But that's not much, you don't get much time in the day for that. The other three are really preoccupying most of our time. Most of the time. So it is by logic we can also conclude, it's by the use of intelligence, conclude that actually by different process of Gyan, that you're actually different from the body, and the body is really unnecessary. But what is your alternative? So this is where the spiritual knowledge comes in, from the Gyan. What is your factual position? It's not enough to be free. That means mukti is actually not enough. Mukti is not satisfying. Temporarily it's satisfying. You got out of the modes of nature. Fantastic. But after 10 minutes one hour, one day, one week. You're feeling, right, there's no pleasures. You're feeling fantastic. You want to do something now, right? Otherwise you'll be bored in that situation of just being, the feeling of relief from the material modes of nature is only temporary. Soon that feeling will be normal. When you come out of the ocean, you're drowned in the ocean, someone pulls you out, you're feeling so happy and so, fantastic. But it doesn't last forever. Then you get conditioned to that position of being safe. Then it becomes, you joke about it. Later on you joke about it. When you're drowning in the water, it's a matter of life and death. You're horrified. When you come out and it's over, the experience is gone, then you laugh about it with your friends. You joke about it, how you were drowning in the water. So the experience you'll forget. So that experience of being free, that experience of being liberated, that will become the normal experience. That will become your normal situation. So then it's not exciting anymore. It's not a relief anymore, it's just normal. It's like the birth, you're born, you're suffering condition. Because we don't know anything else, then it becomes normal. So we think life is not so bad. Normal. So when you're free from this, you think that becomes normal also. It's still not satisfying in that respect. That satisfaction of being free from the material energy is good, but when that feeling goes away, then there's no satisfaction. You're just existing. But we're persons. So the way in personalist philosophy is not very appealing. It's very dry. It's just negation. It's not attractive because we want the natural inclination is to enjoy it. That's what we're trying to do in the material world. We make an endeavor to free the obstacles so we can run and enjoy, right? That's what we want, to get rid of all those other things. Right? To become nicely situated, become rich and famous, like that. We can whole scope for enjoyment. The idea is actually to enjoy. And that's natural. You're meant to enjoy. The soul is meant to enjoy it because it's a part and parcel of Krishna. And Krishna's pastimes are just enjoyment. Pastimes of enjoyment. Lila. Lila means pastime of enjoyment. So we're part of that lila in essence. You can be part of the enjoying world. Krishna's enjoying with his friends. Krishna's the supreme enjoyer. He's not the only enjoyer. Everyone enjoys thoroughly also. It's not that people don't enjoy. You become Krishna's the enjoyer. It doesn't mean no one else is enjoying. No, everyone's enjoying. The whole pastime, the whole world is enjoyment. All the activities are based on enjoyment. And you're part of it. If you go there, you're part of it. Krishna's happiness is the objective when you're there. But you're still part of the whole pastime, the pleasure pastime. You're playing a part in that. So you're experiencing the same pleasure as everyone else. No anxiety there. There's no restriction there. Here there's a restriction. We want to do something, there's restriction. Time, space. Right? There's no Vaikuntha. Without any restriction. Whatever you want can happen. So here, see, whatever So when the Lord desires something, that becomes fact. When we desire, we just daydream it. Then we got to work, thinking, feeling and willing. The feeling and the willing, the endeavor. You got to work for something. But when Krishna or the residents of the spiritual world, their desire is actual fact. It manifests. They don't have to endeavor. There's no obstacles there. Without obstacle, without anxiety, whatever you want. So that's where we actually belong. That's the actual constitution of the soul. So that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer is not a problem. Even if we want to enjoy ourselves, it's not a problem, because you're part of the whole enjoying pastime environment. You're not missing out. You're part of it. But the difference is that we're all maintained by Krishna. It's all his idea. It's his program. He's expanded for his pleasure, so he's expanded into us, me and you, for his pleasure. Now we don't recognize that. Therefore, we're in the material world. We've obliterated Krishna from the picture, or rather, he's obliterated himself from us because of our mentality to enjoy like him. So he takes away that remembrance of him. And then we can have some fun in the material world trying to be the enjoyer. But of course, when we wake up, we realize we're just making an ass of ourselves. You know, hauling this huge body around, feeding it and cleaning it and emptying it till it gets too old to do anything else. You can't, it falls down and falls apart. Then you take another one and try the same thing again. It's a joke. But in every birth, you think you're doing okay. Even the insects and the worms, they think they're doing okay, don't worry. They wouldn't like to be a human being if you asked them. They're quite happy in their situation. So that's the difference. So then, if Krishna wants to appear, partially expand, and then from that expansion appear as himself again, he can also do that. So it's very... this inconceivable potency that the Lord has. How is it the... like when Krishna and Arjuna went to the spiritual world, Mahavishnu says, you're both my expansions. We know that actually Narayana is an expansion of Krishna. But sometimes even the sages or the pranas, they're talking directly to Krishna. They're calling him Purushottam, they're calling him Mahavishnu, they're calling him Narayana, they call him Upendra, the son of Vishnu. There's no contradiction there, because he's all of those, by his inconceivable potencies. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This when Narayana expands into two, there is Amsa, these different limbs, they come every day of Brahma, Narayana Rishi, Lila avatars. But Krishna, Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan, he only comes in every 28 days of Lord Brahma. So those other 27 incarnations of Krishna, who are they? If they wouldn't be Swayam Bhagavan, they wouldn't be God Lord Krishna directly, then he'll be coming through the agency of Mahavishnu, be an avatar of Mahavishnu. So in that case, Krishna would be an expansion of Vishnu. So very difficult to comprehend how these things work. No? So it's not our argument who came first. We don't argue with like the Sri Vaishnavas, or you know, as they say, Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu. No? I guess 27, most of the time he is. No? 27 out of 28 times he is. Krishna is an expansion of Vishnu. So it doesn't nullify the fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's the same potent person, and appearing in different ways according to his desire. But the same instinctive potency is there. He can manage to show it how he wants. So whether he shows it fully in the form of Krishna, he shows all those 64 qualities, 64 traits, or he's only showing 60 in Vishnu, and he's showing less in another and less in another. But he's perfectly capable of showing all, if he wants, in any one of them. He's a Shakti man, and he can act in through any agency that he wants. It's inconceivable for us. But here it says how that Vishnu is expanded into this Rishi. This Rishi is expanded. He's born from this, in this progeny, in this line. It's an expansion of Vishnu. Vishnu appears. And then again, he expands as two. And he expands as Vishnu again. And as Nara, Arjuna, in different dynasties. So nothing is impossible in the spiritual world. But even the jiva, they can also take two portions. Like you hear the different... Arjuna is also an expansion of... No, he's the son of it. He's an expansion of Indra as a son of Indra. But just like the Pearl Harbor, isn't it? Sees an expansion of Haridas. Haridas Thakur is an expansion of Prahlad and also Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma prayed because I'm puffed up with my opulence. Because he's like the supreme creator in the material world. Lord Brahma, he creates the bodies and the stuff, you know? Different bodies for the living entities. And he's on top, right? The demigods go to him when there's any problem. They go to him. He's the main person. So he said when he played a joke, tested Krishna and stole the boys and the calves, then he said, I made a fool of myself. Please let me. But the Acharyas are saying that he wants to become, doesn't want a position like this anymore because of the pride that it can cause, that you can even test the Supreme Lord, your worship of the Lord. So then he got an opportunity to appear as Haridas Thakur, who was humility personified. Then again, some people say that actually Prahlad took birth as Haridas, yeah? So sometimes, and the Acharya is saying them both are right. Both can be right also at the same time. So it's not a problem for two people to end into one person. It's like when Krishna expands, like Krishna, okay, Krishna was born as a son of Krishna and Drona, Krishna Garba. They performed austerities to get Krishna as a son, hanging upside down for thousands of years in the previous yuga. And by their austerity, they got Krishna as a son. But Krishna only takes birth in the womb of Nanda, Nandarani. So it says that Nandarani appears in another form. She expands in a demigod form. On that, they appear as Krishna God. So it expands and expands and expands and down. And then Krishna appears in the same womb. It's actually the same expansion of the. So that's the spiritual dimension. Anything is possible there. Because that energy and the energy energetic are non-different. It works, the energy works exactly how Krishna wants it to work. And no one can question it. Whatever he wants to do, he does. Nothing can obstruct Krishna, as we've seen by his pastimes. He's never obstructed. Only if he wants to be. He lets his mother tie him up. Otherwise we find Krishna's never obstructed. Whatever he wants to do, he does it. It's because everything is working actually under his direction, ultimately. So these are the ways in which the inconceivable Lord behaves. And this is for our benefit also, because these things are so seem contradictory, so then we'll inquire more. There may be contradictory statements in the Shastra which is coming from him. So then we'll inquire more if we're inquisitive. And then we keep on inquiring, and then we get to know Krishna more and more and more. And eventually you've got to know about God, you've got to go to a person that knows God eventually. So if you continue with that inquiry, then eventually you're going to come into contact with the pure devotee of Krishna. So that will be our greatest benefit. So therefore the Lord appears and acts and appears and manifests in so many varieties of ways to attract our attention somewhere. We can catch hold somewhere. This direction, that direction. And then we can gradually approach him. That's the only reason. Otherwise, why would he come here? Why does he do all these things in the material world? To attract the conditioned souls back to him. Give them a chance. So therefore the creation, Lord Brahma, nothing else around. Then the Lord manifests himself to Lord Brahma to do this. Gives the potency, gives the intelligence. Brahma starts to three entities come from Lord Brahma, then the Prajapati has to fill up the universe with. So he starts, the Prajapatis come from him originally, then they start to procreate, and the Lord appears within those dynasties from time to time. He also personally descends, or his representatives, or his whatever. His potency descends directly or indirectly in those dynasties, and appears as part of it. So there's always an opportunity there for the living entities to contact him. There's a reason why he does it. Of course, he has good time. He takes pleasure in doing it also. Even when he comes to the material world, there's no difficulty for him. But we shouldn't think that he comes here really for pleasure, except he wants to act as a baby. But why? There's nothing lacking in the spiritual world. It's millions of times more wonderful than we can ever imagine here. So he wouldn't come here for pleasure, for his own pleasure. So it's for the sake of the living entities that the Lord comes, with his kindness, his love, and his mercy on us, to give us a glimmer of light in this a confusing world. Otherwise no one would ever understand of what is actually going on in this place. So one has to be, one can only hear and accept as the only way of understanding of what is actually, what the material world is, what the creation is all about, how it's functioning. So this is the Lord's kindness. So therefore they come in, he's appearing as directly or vashing as the different sages, they're writing these literatures, they're writing these pranas, giving us a clear indication. What is this material world? What is going on here? Who we are? What is the actual purpose? And what is beyond the material world? Why the material world is here? Why the Lord comes here? Why he does all these things? This is all the Lord's interjection. So that this knowledge and information is spread throughout time. So there's always an opportunity for the living entities to pick up on it and eventually, you know, perfect their lives by pursuing this. Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jai, Śrīmad ki jai, Jai Gopāmanandī. Any comments or questions on this subject? What is the secret to?
To be humble.
Become self-realized is best. Then you'll realize you're 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. Otherwise, Prabhupada said you have to practice being humble. Even if you don't feel like it, just go out and practice being humble. And by practice, then you'll become, that will become your culture. It's like we practice in sadhana bhakti, we're practicing devotional service to Krishna. But we don't have much devotion to Krishna. Mainly we're serving Krishna for some other purpose. Mainly we come to Krishna consciousness for some other purpose. But still, that mechanical, because there's no actual attraction for Krishna, nobody comes generally, four classes of people, even the wise man, Krishna's not much interested in. They're not the wise man, he's serving God because he knows he has to serve God, but it's not much fun for Krishna. I mean, it's not much pleasure for Krishna. He's not doing it out of affection for God. He's just doing it because he knows he's a wise man. He knows that he's a God and I have to serve him. So that's everyone, the four pious people. So everyone's got the... No one's coming for Krishna's pleasure, which is actually the function of the Lord. But the process is given, okay, whatever you want, come to do like this. So we're practicing, we're going through this mechanical process, throwing the body here and there, trying to, you know, adjust the mind and develop these attitudes and these different qualities, with training. And that is the best situation, these nine devotional processes, is the best situation that we can put ourselves in the material world to evoke the mercy of the devotees and the Lord. Krishna said, if you can't always remember me, then follow these regulative principles of freedom. Man, man, bhava, man, bhakta. If you can't do that, can't always remember me. Then you practice. Do you follow this sadhana bhakti? Work for me. Do, you know, connect with me somewhere. And by doing that, this will put us in a situation where eventually, if we're sincere, we will evoke the mercy of the devotees of the Lord. So that's the problem. Krishna's doing everything from within. It's his process he's given. We're just applying it. We're thinking and feeling and willing, applying ourselves to that process of Krishna consciousness, and everything else will go on esoterically. You will gradually develop a taste for Krishna. You will start to give up the taste for material life. But this is the science. It does work by just applying yourself. So similarly, if you practice being any of these qualities like humility, you practice it. You put yourself in that position. Read about the qualities of those humble devotees. Read their pastimes and how humble the Lord Himself is. And aspire for those qualities, at least desire those qualities, even if we don't have them. So like this, practice. And then when you become self-realized, or become blessed, then you realize, actually we are insignificant. What have we got to be proud of? What is there to be proud of? This body is something to be proud of? A bag of stool, and bones and mucus and hairs. Don't be proud of a bag of all these impure things, which is destined to rot or be eaten. Nothing to be proud of. But that you're just carrying this huge weight bag of stool around for 50 years or 100 years and trying to make it, you know, if the bag is tight, then it's attractive. If the bag is loose, then it's not very attractive, right? Same thing. Inside is the same thing, but when the skin is tight, when it's young, then it's attractive. When it's old and wrinkled, it's not attractive. It's the same stuff. So you become attached to your own bag, and then you become attracted to another bag. And a result of that, there becomes other little bags. You get more and more entangled. But when you actually understand what's going on, what is it to be really proud of? You know? And any ability that you have is given by Krishna anyway. So when we learn these things, it's a gradual process. When you learn these things bit by bit, then we can give up this false notion of being special. There's a letter from the airwaves, from Kalinda Sundari, Columbus. Is it Columbus or Columbus? Okay, it's written Columbus here. Prabhupada, please accept our humble obeisance. I'm happy to see you. How I understand I am in progressing in spiritual life or not. I'm happy to hear you. I wish I could see you also. I'd also be happy seeing you. But how can I understand if I am progressing in spiritual life or not? You should be... Srila Prabhupada said that when one is advancing, he becomes joyful. You should be more carefree. Callous to the material demands of the body. Means they're not so important anymore, the demands of the body. And you're joyful in serving the devotees and Krishna. That's how you can understand how you're advancing in spiritual life. What is your attachment? And that goes progressively as you endeavor to give up the desire for material desires, and Krishna will bless you. And so it's proportionate. As one goes up, the other goes down. Because Maya is there and Krishna is there all the time. So as soon as you focus on Maya, she's, you know, then that she's absorbing your energy. Then that's, she's very attractive, Maya is super attractive. So then that's very, you're very nice, but then you're going down like that on the material platform. Or up on the material platform. And the spiritual life is being neglected. When you focus on Krishna consciousness, it's also very nice. So they're both very nice. Both material life and the spiritual life. They're both very nice. Now, a conditioned state of material life is nice. Spiritual gratification is material, is very nice. Otherwise, why can't anyone give it up? Why don't we just stop material life altogether? Because it's nice. So it's attractive. We know we're conditioned into thinking this is worthwhile. That's our condition. So it is attractive. Material life is the sense is that it's very nice. Otherwise, why are we endeavoring so much? Why is it so difficult to let go? Because the feeling is actually nice. And when we engage in Krishna consciousness, it's also very nice. Right? So they're both very nice. So whatever you focus on is when you focus on Maya, then Durga, she becomes the Supreme Personality of Goddess. When you focus on the other side, then Radharani becomes Krishna becomes the Supreme. But they're both, whatever one you go in, they're both nice, you see. And you can be happy in either, apparently. The sensation is you're happy in when you're engaging in material sense gratification. Right? Pleasure there. It feels nice. Pleasure. That's our experience. But while you're doing that, then you're going down spiritually. So according to your attraction for Krishna and your attraction for Maya, then you can understand, you can weigh the two up. What is most appealing to you? Of course, and they'll be different. You know, some things are appealing, some things on that side are more appealing. So when you're so therefore it's an endeavor to say no to Maya. We have to accept what's favorable for Krishna and reject what's unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. So that sense, material sense gratification for my personal pleasure is Maya. When I'm acting for Krishna's pleasure, or if I'm acting in Krishna consciousness for my pleasure, that's also spiritual sense gratification, not pure devotional service, but still it's better than acting, getting your pleasure in Maya, because you're connected with Krishna, not the shadow. So that's how you can understand how you're advancing or not, according to your attraction to Maya. How difficult it is to say no to Maya. If it's difficult, that means we have more work to do. Krishna's not so attractive. Right? Krishna's available at any time, but something else, Maya, is attractive and it's pulling us, and we can't turn our head away. We've heard Krishna's all attractive, that's intelligence. But the experience is, right now, Maya is more attractive than Krishna. I can't turn my head away from this. I can't get my senses away from this. This is more important right now than Krishna. Even though intellectually you understand this is actually illusory and Krishna's consciousness is the best. But the at this moment, this is what I'm feeling. And you're going on feelings, emotions, feelings. The mind is there. The enjoyment is going on in the mind. Sensations are coming through the mind first, you see. So therefore, where that pleasure is coming from, then you're going that way. So therefore, the material world seems real and spiritual life seems artificial, an endeavor. Right? So it is in Saranda Bhakti, it's artificial endeavor. On a promise, on intelligence, that we get something better. So we're saying no to something tangible, pleasure, on a promise of Krishna. So that's the difficult part. So the easier it becomes, that means you're becoming more advanced. So when you become indifferent to your likes and dislikes, material dislikes, that means advanced. But opportunity is always there, at any stage of life, right up to bhava. Opportunity, Maya is there, presenting pleasure, and Krishna is there presenting pleasure also. And we're taking the choice. And Krishna's not interfering with that, with our choice or freedom. So when you're happy in service, advanced means you become joyful. I mean, different to the material pains and pleasures. Okay? Happy chanting and dancing and serving Krishna. Srivabhadaki jai.